Massive news. We're going to have Russ vote on tomorrow about his organization. Massive news on the border. Just finished a press conference. We have Ben Burquam.
Yes.
Ben Burquam's on. Ben, tell our audience what has happened today.
Hey, Steve, we are here live in Brackettville, Texas, and it's really a historic day. I'm going to actually let Ken Cuccinelli tell you why it's so significant, but a declaration by judges and sheriffs, and we're also here with, obviously, Congressman Chip Roy, a declaration of an invasion on the southern border. It's never been done before, as far as I know. Ken, if you'd take over, let us know. Why is today so significant?
Sure. Steve, you and I have talked about it before, but here it's actually happened. A judge here in Texas ruled as a matter of law that Texas is being invaded, specifically Kinney County, Texas. And that is the first time in American history that legal conclusion by a judge has ever been made. Now, if Governor Abbott, we're in Texas, so if Governor Abbott came to the same conclusion, just declared the invasion, his constitutional authority would be triggered to go ahead and repel that invasion. And all we're talking about here is putting people back across the border. It looks exactly like Title 42 does today, except it's state officials doing it. National Guard, DPS, you can deputize all of your local law enforcement, all the brave men and women we heard from here today can all participate. Frankly, people from other states whose governors like Florida and Nebraska have said, we'll give you personnel, can come be deputized and participate in securing the border that Joe Biden has refused to secure. So today's historic in that sense. A couple of months ago, the AG of Arizona issued the first legal opinion saying we're being invaded. This is the first time a judge has so ruled.
Go ahead, Steve.
For Chip Roy, and Ken, stick there through the break, but Chip Roy, you're one of the top guys in this. Is this constitutional? I think a lot of people are going to go, well, hang on, can counties and states actually be invaded? I thought that was the purview of the federal government in the United States of America, sir.
Congressman Roy, so the question is this constitutional? Can locals, can the state do this? A lot of people are looking at this saying, you know, it's never been done before. Is it constitutional? What's your message to them, sir?
Yeah, well, first of all, we know how to secure the border. We saw it under President Trump. We saw what you do when you have physical infrastructure. We saw what you do when you actually enforce policies. And when you recognize cartels, the danger they are. You take action, you can secure the border, the numbers go down. This administration is doing the opposite, and it's purposeful. I was in Eagle Pass just this morning, went to their brand new tent facility. And what's it designed to do? Process people. They're going to process people in the United States and release them. That's what they're doing. That's drawing more people, empowering cartels. I asked a woman today from Cuba, hey, how much did you have to pay? She said almost $10,000. Now, I asked her point blank. There's no propaganda there. So what can Texas do to secure our communities from fentanyl, from gangs, from the danger, from fences getting cut and livestock getting out, from all the harm being perpetrated against Texas? Which is do what you do in a republic when a constitution recognizes the power of the state to protect its people under the Constitution. That's what the Constitution does. It gives us the power to say we're going to repel an invasion
wow.
as we're seeing it unfold before our eyes, where Texans are being harmed by empowered cartels, who are well-armed, by the way, flooding fentanyl into our schools, fentanyl into our streets, Texans dying, causing massive economic damage, massive harm to counties. We have the power under the Constitution to do that.
Hold that thought. We're going to go to break. Steve,
just hold the thought. Ben Burquam in Texas, in Brackettville, Texas. Take it, sir.
Thank you, Steve. So the question first is to you, Ken Cuccinelli. How did you come up with this idea?
I read the Constitution. It's in plain text at the very end of Article 1, and it says very clearly that states, when they're actually invaded, those are the words used, they can respond. But that resides with the governor. That authority resides with the governor. So no one had looked at this before. This did used to happen. Go back before the Border Patrol. We've got Mark Morgan here, of course. Before the Border Patrol, Texas patrolled its border. Arizona patrolled its border. New Mexico, California patrolled their borders. Where do you think they got the authority to do that? This is where they got the authority to do it. And it was very small numbers for those first 100 years or so before the Border Patrol was brought into existence to take over the mission. And of course, now we have a Border Patrol that's being held back from doing that mission, and states still have that same authority. It's at the very end of Article 1. The Founding Fathers knew what they were doing.
Mark Morgan, former Border Patrol CBP director. What does this mean actionably for you guys, for the boots on the ground, the people on the border? What would this mean when it goes into effect?
Yeah, look, I don't want to oversimplify a complex, complicated issue, but at the end of the day, here's what it means, is that as long as those that are coming in breaking our country illegally, as long as you're releasing them into the United States and not deporting them lawfully, they're going to keep coming. You can throw all the resources, you can build all the wall, you can throw all the Border Patrol agents down there and technology, which I support, by the way, but you could do that. But as long as you're releasing them and not lawfully deporting them, they're going to keep coming. What this happens is, with the governor declaring an invasion, he's not enforcing immigration law. He's protecting the states. And what he can do as part of this declaration is then he can take away one of the things that the illegal aliens want, and that's to be released. They can instead detain them and remove them. You start removing them, you're going to see the numbers drastically go down. That's where we're going to be able. That means more Border Patrol agents back on the line, and that means a more secure border.
Perfect segue for Kinney County Sheriff. You did something that I haven't heard anyone else do. You actually took illegal aliens that had come on into your county. You took them back and sent them back across the border. How does declaring this an invasion, how does that help you, and how does that help every other sheriff? And what if the governor doesn't do it? Will you continue?
Well, the whole thing with that was there were four individuals that were involved in a wreck. And because they had been involved in a wreck, Border Patrol wanted them to be medically cleared by a medical doctor at an emergency room. I don't have the personnel, I don't have the time, I don't have the funds to pay for those bills if I take them into the emergency room. So based on what I had going, the number of personnel, my best option was to take them back to the port of entry and show them the way home. Now, once they got out of that vehicle, they were free to do whatever they wanted. They could either return to Mexico or they could try to come back in the United States again. That was up to them. But there was no formal deportation, there was no hearing, it was just taking them back to their point of entry and releasing them there. If they came back, they come back. If they go home, they go home.
And Congressman, you mentioned, we were talking about that. This is, they're breaking their oath of office. So when you talk about Washington, D.C., what are you going to do in Washington, D.C.? And really, is this treason, what Joe Biden is doing? And at that point, what do we do? If the governor doesn't do it, if Governor Abbott gives it lip service, doesn't do it, obviously Joe Biden's not going to do it. What's next?
Well, first of all, Republicans need to make very clear what our plan is, what we would do to secure the border immediately. We know what it is, right? We've got it. We've laid it out. Mark's part of a great group that has put together a plan of activists and people in D.C. and the smartest people on this topic, and it's a great plan. I've laid out some ideas that are 90% overlap. Let's get it out there. You need physical infrastructure. You need to enforce the policies. You need to be able to make sure asylum is defined properly. You need to be able to end catch and release. You need to be able to turn people away at the border like we do at Title 42. These are all things we know we need to do. Deal with the cartels appropriately. We can do that. We can do it tomorrow. And that's kind of what we're all about here, is why the federal government is refusing to do those things. And they're doing that purposely. Do I think that what they're doing is a violation of their oath? Yes. Do I think they're lying to us, as Mark articulated earlier? Yes. Do I think that we should impeach Mayorkas? Absolutely. We should take everything we can to go hammer them. But here's the important part. Republicans should stop funding an agency that is refusing to secure the law, secure the border. We should not give them a blank check. We should give them requirements. We should put riders on everything we give them and say, you're going to do this or you're not getting this money. We should take action as Republicans and not just sit back and use it to run for office. We owe the people of this country the fight.
How can we help? How can the people of this country help anyone? And Steve, if you want to jump in, go ahead.
Here's what I want to say. I want to say you got Ken Cuccinelli, you got Mark Morgan, you got Sheriff Coe from Kinney County, you got Chip Roy. That's the 27 Yankees. I want this audience to understand that you have some of the toughest, smartest people in this country that are on this problem. This is not something kicked under. You just heard what Chip Roy said. Start putting requirements in these appropriations bills. We got to bounce. But I got to tell you, this thing is monumental. In the Center for Renewing America, Ken Cuccinelli, going to have Russ vote on tomorrow morning, go in more detail. Ken, we can't thank you enough. Chip Roy, you've been a lion on this. Sheriff Kenny, you're a hero. And Mark Morgan, we can't wait till we get you back in to head up the whole, to impeach Mayorkas and replace him with Mark Morgan. That's the type of heroes you need, Ben Berquam.
Thank you, sir. Yep. Well, thank you, guys. He says we've got the 27 Yankees out here. So this is it. It's the American people, guys. And to answer my own question, it's up to the American people to stand behind them and call out news media. We're filling the void there. It's time for you guys to fill the void at home. Stand up and take this country back.
Berquam, real quickly, what's your social media? How do people get to you in Real America's Voice?
at Ben Berquam on social media, frontlineamerica.com, and of course, America's Voice News. You can download the app on your phone. Watch us everywhere. Watch us live. Ditch all the other fake news media. Only come to Real America's Voice. Get the real news. And again, we're filling the void where the media is supposed to be.
Ben, thank you very much. Thank you. Russ Vogt, when you look at the Constitution, do you see it the same way, sir, as this ancient, that we live in bondage to something that doesn't work today and has enslaved us, sir?
Of course not. I mean, this is where the left is. It's just ridiculous, and they have rejected the Constitution. They rejected it 100 years ago. They've built up an administrative state that has largely allowed them to evade the Constitution and to rule through experts. And the one of the areas that they have not been successful at is in the area of Second Amendment rights. And as a result, that is why after every crisis, they are unhappy with the control that they have, and they are looking to basically make it so that they have that control too, and they have the ability to do gun registries and red flag laws to let the administrative state know who the gun owners are and to make it sure that we don't have the ability to protect ourselves from the impact of tyrannical government. And I think that is one of the lessons that we continue to try to teach them, but they have no interest in learning that.
Russ, you and Cuccinelli, though, look at the Constitution and see a document that is thriving and robust. What did you guys do with it on the southern border to stop the invasion using the United States Constitution as a foundational element?
Right. We wanted to look and see what it actually said about a predicament that a border governor would be in when you have a Biden administration that refuses to do its job under the Constitution. And lo and behold, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 3 provides a roadmap to say that states have self-help, self-defense provisions to be able to say, if invaded, they can use warlike authorities, not in terms of trying to invade on their side of the border, but to use their authorities to interdict and remove illegal immigrants and bring them back. And this would be rules of engagement to sheriffs and state troopers that would not require the Biden administration's approval. And what we're seeing is we saw a state attorney general step up and say they have the legal opinion to do this. The facts on the border, the cartels having operational control, the numbers that we're talking about, of course it constitutes an invasion. And what you're now seeing is local judges and sheriffs taking matters into their own hands. We need the governor of Arizona and Texas in particular to step up and declare an invasion and to make this a statewide authority, a statewide initiative. And then we will be able to stop the flow. I think we're going to get there over the next several months, but it has to happen. We're losing every day that goes by. We are dealing with a crisis, and we've got to put that crisis to bed.
Real quickly, Russ, for those on the left, the Morning Joes and the Morning Mikas and Rachel Maddow in the crowd say, hey, this is Russ Vogt and Bannon in this crowd, this MAGA crowd, just being performative. There's no real bite here. This is just this is high performance art. Sir, your response.
Oh, no, absolutely not. This is the only thing that will actually be not performance art. Performance art is when you put illegal immigrants on a bus and send them to the Capitol for some tourism. That's what performative theater is. Performative theater is not a governor looking at the Constitution and using authorities that have not been used before because they're just the Constitution has gotten dusty. No, this is what it actually looks like to have separation of powers, to have federalism, and to use the authorities that are given under the Constitution and to have that debate at the national level. That is exactly what will fix this problem, and it's something that we have real experts who have sitting in these chairs. Ken Cuccinelli was an attorney general of a state. He was the deputy secretary of the Department of Homeland Security. He is the lead author on this proposal, and it will work, and that has been testified as recently as yesterday by these local judges and sheriffs.
By the way, the big battle here is taking on the administrative state, deconstructing it every day, the Center for Renewing America. They're doing it. Russ Vogt, how they find you on social media, and how do they get to your magnificent center, sir?
Thanks, Steve. AmericaRenewing.com is the website. We are updating it regularly. And then I'm at Russ Vogt on all the channels to be following what we're doing. Thanks so much.
Russ, thank you so much.
Teachers at this primary school in China
蓝色是90了.
Know exactly when someone isn't paying attention.
白色，就是你可能跟网络还没有连接好。
These headbands measure each student's level of concentration. The information is then directly sent to the teacher's computer and to parents. But schools say it wasn't hard for them getting parental consent to enroll kids into what is one of the world's largest experiments in AI education. A program that's supposed to boost students' grades while also feeding powerful algorithms. The government has poured billions of dollars into the project, bringing together tech giants, startups, and schools. We got exclusive access to a primary school a few hours outside of Shanghai.
2, 3,
to see firsthand how AI tech is being used in the classroom. For this fifth grade class, the day begins with putting on a brainwave sensing gadget. Students then practice meditating. The device is made in China and has three electrodes, two behind the ears and one on the forehead. These sensors pick up electrical signals sent by neurons in the brain. The neural data is then sent in real time to the teacher's computer. So while students are solving math problems, a teacher can quickly find out who's paying attention and who's not.
说明这段时间他是有点在那走神的。
A report is then generated that shows how well the class was paying attention. It even details each student's concentration level at 10-minute intervals.
Oh my God, if this doesn't scare you to the bone, the marrow of your bones, Joe Allen, this is what I keep saying about transhumanism and about the convergence into the singularity. We have no earthly idea of the experiments that are going on in other countries and what's on behind the scenes. This is one they're public about. Joe Allen, this is AI can actually read your thoughts. Is that what I'm understanding with the headband, sir?
Yeah, that's the intention, Steve. There's a lot of questions as to how accurate it is at the moment. It's not reading actual thoughts as in words or images. It's just simply gauging, in this instance, attention. Now, there's a story that was just broken about a new program that the Comprehensive National Science Center in China is undergoing. The operation basically subjects Communist Party members to digital surveillance while looking at Communist Party propaganda. So the way it works is that a Communist Party member will sit down at a terminal. His face will be monitored by facial recognition, which will gauge emotion and different sorts of psychological disturbances. And then also there will be a non-invasive brain-computer interface put on the head, just like in the film we just saw. So the purpose, of course, is to gauge how loyal a Communist Party member is to the party as they're absorbing propaganda. This has been proposed in the U.S. to monitor people for, say, for instance, the potential for mass shootings or things like that. It's every tech company working on brain-computer interfaces they have two different ways of doing so. It's either invasive, as we've covered quite a bit, going into the brain, which is highly experimental and is not being rolled out en masse. But then you have the non-invasive brain-computer interface, which doesn't need FDA approval or anything like that. And as we see in China, it's being rolled out in experimental programs for children in order to improve supposedly educational quality. You can be sure that it's also priming them for the later sorts of procedures that we see coming out of the Comprehensive National Science Center.
I just want to make sure we have the two paths. Is the Elon Musk, that's the Neuralink chip in the brain, right? And the other path is this band around the head. Both of them eventually get you to the same point because it's a brain chip. It's a brain-computer interface. Is that correct, Joe?
Yeah, but obviously the non-invasive doesn't get the detail that the invasive is looking for. So what's really important about the non-invasive brain-computer interface, just the simple caps to scan your brain, is that it's readily acceptable by so many people. There aren't any sort of health risk other than social health and psychological health. And so the non-invasive brain-computer interface is a stepping stone we already have our foot on.
Yeah. Brave new world. Joe, how do people get to you for all the breaking news you're putting up on warm.org and your own site about transhumanism?
Yeah, of course, you can find me warroom.org under the transhumanism tab. Also, my social media at JOEBOTXYZ or my website, gobot.xyz. There's a new article up about the potential transhumanist race war.
I want to bring in Dr. Peter McCullough now from Harvard, one of the top guys in this entire, one of the top doctors and researchers in this whole area of the vaccines. Dr. McCullough, talk to us first about this what's happened at this conference about FDA, because I want to ask you about Canada, and I want to ask you also about this Wall Street Journal op-ed. You've got something to report for us, sir.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show, Steve. And just a correction, I'm not at Harvard. I previously had lectured there as a guest lecturer. I'm in Dallas, Texas, in academic practice. And the update is that on June 11th, the World Council for Health, which represents about 70 organizations internationally, called for a recall of pulling all the COVID-19 vaccines off the market. And they based this call, according to the U.S. CDC VAERS system, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, but also the U.K. Yellow Card System, the EU EUDRA system, and the VigiSafe system held by the WHO. Four out of the 39 systems that are out there show record deaths after vaccination. 40,000 deaths overall certified by these agencies occur typically within a few days of taking the vaccine. Clearly, the excess mortality is far too high. And these systems are all congruent with one another. We think this is a vast underreporting of what's really happening out there. And at this point in time, Dr. Katarina Lindley from Texas read this into the FDA record. She was one of the presenters at the pediatric meetings for EUA approval, ages 6 months to 5 years. She read this into the record. I also read it into the Texas Senate record myself on June 27th, 2022. And the only answer that's there right now, people keep asking me, why is no one in Washington talking about it? And the answer is the FDA, CDC, NIH, and White House Task Force are willfully blind to the safety problem with the vaccines, and it's a serious one. We're talking about excess death.
Dr. McCullough, hang on, we'll take a short commercial break. I want to come back and ask you, why are they willfully blind, and why do they pass this for the under five-year-olds? McCullough, Dr. McCullough, how can all those agencies you listed, the White House, all of it, how could they be willfully blind?
The whole program was set up incorrectly. There should have been a separate vaccine administration. And it should have had a data safety monitoring board, a critical event committee, a human ethics committee, and it should have had monthly safety meetings. Instead, the CDC and FDA were named as the sponsors of the program. They were told to get a needle in every arm. So in order to do that, the FDA is intentionally willfully blind, and the CDC has overstepped its powers. Normally, it's a data outbreak evaluation unit. So it's really a problem because there is nothing right now. There's no agency on these COVID-19 vaccines that's protecting the safety of Americans.
What do you recommend has to happen right now to change that?
We have to immediately have the FDA and CDC be dissolved as the program sponsors. I think all the mandates should be dropped and there should be a temporary pause. We should go along with the World Council for Health and pull all the vaccines off the market, figure out what went wrong, and start to really in earnest evaluate safety. Who is injured, disabled, and actually have died through the vaccines?
You've had a chance to look at this op-ed in the Wall Street Journal. Is the Wall Street Journal's editorial page starting to agree with the Dr. Malone's and Dr. McCullough's, Naomi Wolf's of the world about the vaccines, sir?
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, there's a one-way trend here that large corporations, jurisdictions, and even countries, the one-way trend is to drop these vaccines. It's not the opposite. It's not like large companies are picking up new vaccine mandates. People have really lost their love affair with mass vaccination. They've seen it fail in terms of safety and efficacy. And I think many actually just want to be over with COVID now and move on.
Dr. McCullough, how can people get to you and follow your writings and follow you on social media?
I have a link tree, petermcculloughmd.com. That'll take you out to all the social media sources. I'm up on Twitter as p_mcculloughmd. I have hundreds of thousands of followers. I have a new book out, Courage to Face COVID-19. It's a bestseller in multiple categories on Amazon. And as many know, I'm a frequent contributor on Fox News. I have a weekly podcast on America Out Loud, Talk Radio, McCullough Report. And so I'm very visible to the country.
Dr. McCullough, honored to have you on here. Look forward to having you back.
Thank you.
Dr. McCullough, one of the lead of thought. Let's bring in Dr. Malone. Dr. Malone, we didn't have enough time yesterday. We start with Christine Anderson in Europe talking about all the results of the vax. I mean, we're being overwhelmed with information now. There's lawsuits going on. There's people trying to hold the Administrative State, CDC, and FDA accountable. Put it in perspective. Where do we stand right now, according to Dr. Robert Malone, who, quite frankly, is probably the titular head of this movement?
Well, thanks. There's many warriors in this, and I'm one of them. It's fascinating that the data are now flooding out of Europe, and there's reports now from one of the European states that there is an effort by the administration within that country. I'm sorry, I put it on Getter, but I'm blanking, to start to hold doctors accountable for the vaccine damage caused, because they should have more appropriately disclose the risks to their patients. So this is the kind of strategy we would expect any administrative state to do, which is to deflect the blame as it becomes more apparent that these adverse events are occurring and compounding. The big news is, in my opinion, the repeated infection by Omicron in the fully vaccinated with the associated hospitalization and death risk, and that can be traced back to this phenomena of immune imprinting or original antigenic sin, for those of you on a Catholic jib cut. This is this process that we spoke about previously, that being that your immune system develops a bias based on what it's been exposed to in the past that makes it difficult for it to respond to new pathogens that are similar but different. This is the problem why the influenza vaccines have effectiveness in the 20 to 30% range. And it's why we have these problems right now with the corona vaccines. And in the face of this, the Biden administration is pushing forward as fast as they can to develop, and they've already done the purchase order, a bivalent vaccine that includes both Omicron as well as Wuhan 1 spike strains, completely disregarding that what's become clear now is that spike is in fact a toxin, as I said about 2 years ago on the Brett Weinstein podcast and was resoundingly fact-checked. But now the data are so overwhelming that it cannot be denied.
Dr. Mo, go back. I want to just, you're saying repeat infections on Omicron. Where are you pulling that data from? Where do you refer to when you cite that's a scientific fact?
Some obscure scientific journals called Cell, Nature, and Science. Peer-reviewed literature covered that in a Substack last Friday, as I recall, in response to a prompt by the Wall Street Journal. And in fact, in the Wall Street Journal's op-ed yesterday, bless their hearts, they explicitly acknowledged the risk of reinfection and the role of immune imprinting.
Well, why is it, we got about a minute here, we're going to hold you through the break. Why is it then that we just had, was it the FDA had their counsel now, two individuals voted against it, but 19-2, they authorized with all that data, and everything Naomi Wolf's doing and you're doing and Peter McCullough's doing, with all that data, they authorize. In fact, they're pushing for vaccinations of under five-year-olds all the way down to what, six-month-old babies.
All that data of risks, and acknowledged by them, virtually no substantial data regarding the risks in this youngest cohort. And that is going to turn out to be one of the major turning point scandals for the FDA. It clearly illustrates that both the FDA and the CDC have been compromised by the corporatist administrative state collusion problem. And fascinating, one of the two that had objected at the FDA level was Dr. Paul Offit, who is all the way through been a total shill for the vaccine companies because he gets a lot of his personal money from them. But now he's turning and saying, no, we don't have enough data to do this. But he was overruled.
Dr. Malone has been one of the leaders of this movement. You know, he's one of the inventors of the mRNA, the underlying technology for that. He's been one of the intellectual leaders in this movement. Your book is out, or at least it's not going to come out until September, but you can pre-order it. Where are you taking us over the next couple of months as we lead up to November in this massive election? What's the driving? Where are you taking this movement about the crisis with these vaccines, Dr. Malone?
So there's three remaining sections that I'm in the middle of writing, and the most important right now, and people that are watching on Substack and Getter are aware of this, is my assessment of the administrative state and the HHS and what needs to be done to break that apart and get us back on track and on an even keel. I also have sections in progress right now that speak of an alternative narrative concerning the genesis of this whole globalized response, and another one with Whitney Webb focusing on the granular details of the WEF, how it operates, and how it's in the current situation, its origins, etc.
Dr. Malone, the title of the book, and how do people go to Amazon to order it now?
It's Lies My Government Told Me and the Better Way Ahead. And the better way ahead is what I'm focused on right now. I'm increasingly optimistic with the Supreme Court decisions that there are pathways forward that we didn't have as of just a few weeks ago. You can pre-order on Amazon. Sorry about that. But Amazon is the only one right now. And of course, you can always find me on rwmalonemd.substack.com. And my primary social media account is on Getter always.
Yeah. Captain Bannon and Harnwell are going to run seminars about how to get up on Getter for our audience that's not up there, because it's amazing. And you get the best of Dr. Malone and Steve Cortez, host of us. I'm up there 24/7. Dr. Malone, thank you very much for joining us this morning, sir.
Thank you, Steve.
Scientific studies clearly show that our protection from the initial two-dose vaccine decreases over time. Our immunity level evolves in a dynamic way as a function of time and variants. The virus evolves, and Omicron cruelly made us aware that we will never be fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Like the virus, our immunity also evolves, and Omicron made us understand that two doses are no longer enough. We have to maintain our vaccination up to date.
Mark Jeftovic joins us, the bomb thrower. It's the lead story up on, or was the lead up on, Zero Hedge. Wow. Did I just hear the health minister of Canada translated from the French? Jeftovic, did I hear him? You're never going to be fully vaccinated. Did he actually say that?
He said it, and he said that from now on, we have to move to a up-to-date regimen. And for the foreseeable future, up-to-date means having been taken a shot, having been vaxxed within the last 9 months.
Hold on, Jeftovic, stop. It just had McCullough on here. You got Fauci. Isn't this exactly what Fauci promised would never happen? Or am I missing it? Were we promised it was going to be the vax, and then maybe you need one booster, and there's argument about another booster? You've got a senior guy in the senior guy responsible for the Canadian government saying we're not going to be fully vaxxed, and you're never going to be fully vaxxed. Is that not a bait and switch, Mark Jeftovic?
Yeah, it takes moving the goalposts to a whole new level. And, you know, not to your point, not only did Fauci say that, you know, you would be one and done or two and done. Here in Canada, Trudeau said he was against vaccine mandates at the very beginning. He said he didn't want it to become a divisive issue amongst Canadians. And then he went on himself to demonize Canadians who were against mandates, not against vaccines, but against having it forced upon them. He was demonizing them as racists and fringe. And so everyone involved in this is doing the bait and switch, as you said.
Look, the Canadians, we saw this during the trucker incident. The nicest people maybe on the planet. Canadian nice. How's this playing with your country? I realize this is hot off the press, but how's this playing with your countrymen?
There's a lot of outrage. And in my article, I showed a recent Angus Reid poll that said Trudeau's support among Canadians is at an all-time low. The segment of the population that strongly agrees with what the government is doing has fallen into single digits. And the largest category is strongly disagree with the Canadian government. And following on Dr. McCullough's point, who was just on, Canada has the lowest booster uptake in the G7. So talking about citizens who are done, who are fed up with this, who see that these things have limited, if any, efficacy, Canadians don't want to get boosted, let alone every 9 months for the rest of the foreseeable future, whatever that means.
I just want to make sure everybody understands. The Canadians, you going along with the program, doing what you're told, when this thing was first laid out by Trudeau and the government, you guys, I think, you had the highest uptick rate initially of actually getting the jab, and then I know the first booster. But my point is you guys almost virtually complied with the program. And so now you're telling me you have the lowest uptick of the latest boosters. That shows you just that the nicest people in the world have said, hey, yo, we're done. Am I reading that correctly?
Yes, the hosers are done. 85% double shot uptake and then lowest third shot booster uptake in the G7.
Oh, 85% and now the lowest. And has the government, I take it the government's had a pretty active media program and earned media program to convince you to take the third booster?
It's not earned media in Canada. It's owned media. The mainstream media is underwritten and subsidized by the government. The CBC is fully funded by the government. So it's all gaslighting all the time. You know, take your boosters, take your shots. Don't be a, you know, don't be fringe. And, just go along to get along.
What does this mean? We had Nigel Farage on to open the show about the Boris Johnson government. It looks like if it's not going to fall, it's critically injured. You got Macron. The people in France rejected his policies, a lot of it about the Ukraine because of the economy. Biden, we just had Boris Epstein on here. Biden's right track, wrong track, 18% right track, lowest in the history of polling. What does this tell us? You know, Trudeau's over there. All those guys are over there like they're big shots, but none of their countries support them. What does this mean overall for the Trudeau government?
Well, Trudeau is on his third minority government, and what he's done to stay in power is he's cut a deal. He's effectively merged the Liberal Party with the NDP Party, which is a socialist party. So I just call it the Liberal Socialist Party here in Canada, and that's the only reason they're still in power. Because the opposition would have brought, you know, successful non-confidence votes against them to oust them by now. But right now, as long as the NDPs keep propping up the Liberals, they're around till 2025. But I think when 2025 hits, if they do last that long, we're going to see a blowout of epic proportions up here in Canada, something we haven't seen since 1993 when the Mulroney government went from 160 seats in the House of Commons to two. And I think that's what we're headed for in 2025, if we even tsunami, get there.
This tsunami's building here, France, everywhere. Okay, Jeff Devick, how do people get to you on social media? Because you're everywhere.
Yeah, I'm a bomb thrower on Getter. The website's bites.com. And if you haven't been kicked off of Twitter yet, I'm Stunt Pope over there.
Okay, brother. Thank you very much. Great article. I'm glad the guys at Zero Hedge picked it up right away.
All right. Thanks, Steve. Nice to see you again.
Arizona is under attack. I'm Carrie Lake. As governor, I will issue a declaration of invasion, finish President Trump's wall, blow up the cartel's drug tunnels and surveillance drones, and deploy the Arizona National Guard to stop illegals from entering. Arizona is our home. And I will do everything in my power to defend our families.
Endorsed by President Trump, Carrie Lake for governor.
Okay, Carrie Lake, we started the show with a cold open. We may try to get to it in a minute if we have time, where Morning Mika is just going after Carrie Lake, too radical, et cetera. We were at Brackettville, Texas yesterday with Ben Burquam, Ken Cuccinelli. We had Russ Vogt on from Center for Renewing America, the intellectual driving force in back of this issue of the states stepping up and the states stepping up and actually saying, hey, there's an invasion and we're going to stop it if the federal government's going to just exacerbate it. Why has this not happened in Arizona, ma'am?
I don't know. I think it's a lack of leadership, a lack of will. I hate to think that our current crop of leaders want this to go on, want to see a change in our voting demographics. A lot of people believe that people coming in illegally are being kind of shipped around the country to change the voting demographics. And they're ready to give away American citizenship. And America is not going to put up with that. My border policy, and I worked with some of those men that you mentioned to put this together to make sure we had a very strong border policy that would hold up in the courts and that would actually secure our border. And we will do it starting in January of 23. I'm happy, Steve, that a couple of very strong sheriffs in Texas are starting to act on their own and in their own counties, calling it what it is, an invasion, and enacting that Article 1, Section 10 ability to protect their own counties and their own citizens.
Here's what I don't understand. Merrick Garland, in May of 2021, sent a letter when the great heroes and patriots were down in Phoenix doing the going through the analysis of the audit, sent a warning shot about anybody canvassing. They were going to threaten legal action against them, criminal action about citizens going around assisting on canvassing. Merrick Garland has stood by and allowed this invasion of the southern border, hasn't lifted a finger. And yesterday, am I correct that Merrick Garland, is he suing the state of Arizona about the voter ID situation? What is Merrick Garland doing there today about Arizona, ma'am?
There's no words for what he's up to. Why would he want us to allow people who are not legal to vote in our election? What's the reason for that? It's the most outrageous administration, illegitimate administration, and they are dead set on destroying America. And that's why we need to elect strong governors, America first governors, especially here in Arizona. We don't have a lot of border states left, and we've got to protect the ones we've got with strong leadership. We will push back against somebody like Merrick Garland. Obviously, he wants to see illegals vote. We do not, and they will not in Arizona when I'm governor. And I hope that our state is strong enough this election to make sure that we're demanding proof of citizenship and ID when we vote this coming election, which is August 2nd for the primary. However, they just started today early voting because in Arizona we have an election month, not an election day.
What Morning Mika picked on, went after you about, is your debate the other night when you asked about who's thought the election was fraudulent, who's going to get to it. And I guess one of the candidates, you raised your hand, a couple others, one of the candidates didn't. What confuses people, and this Garland is now, part of it was illegal alien voting. People, you know, you could, only American citizens are supposed to be able to vote, but that's clearly not what Democrats want. I think what confuses our audience is knowing how many great patriots they see in the MAGA movement. Trump goes out to Florence, 60,000 people show up. You have this sweltering arena in May and June and July of 2021, and you've got these patriots there that are going through doing the audit every day, right? You see nothing but MAGA, and you see nothing but patriots, yet you have Ducey, who won't do anything. You got Attorney General that won't do anything. You've got candidates that are taking that party line. How can the establishment, you know, blue blazer, khaki pants crowd, it seems like it controls the Republican Party in the state when there's so much support for Donald J. Trump, who happens to endorse you?
they're in an all-out panic right now. I mean, the devil doesn't die quietly, and they are pushing, the swamp is pushing their own hand-picked candidate in my opponent, Karen Robeson. She's married to a 95-year-old billionaire. She's spending all of his money trying to buy this election and paint herself as America first when she's truly an open borders globalist with an incredibly liberal voting record when Ducey appointed her to the Board of Regents here in Arizona. She voted pro-abortion. She voted for gun control. She voted to give illegal immigrants a reduced tuition less than what American students had to pay. She's bad news for Arizona, and she's trying to buy this election because they are so panicked about getting an America First patriot in office. But the good news is she may be trying to buy the election, Steve, but the people of Arizona aren't buying the lies she's pushing. And she can pour as much of her husband's billions down the toilet as she wants, but we will not have this election stolen or bought. It will be won fair and square, and we will have America First, Arizona First policies in place starting January of 2023 in the first minute I take office.
Carrie, today's the first day of early voting. How do people, what site do they go to? How do people get engaged? How do they get involved? How do they support you, and particularly the great citizens of Arizona? What is your site? Give us your site where they're supposed to go to figure out where they do their early voting and how they get engaged today.
Excellent. Thank you for asking, Steve. KarrieLake.com, KarrieLake.com. You can find out information there. When you get those ballots in the mail, if you're doing mail-in balloting, make sure you sit down and fill that out. Elect America First patriots. We need that here in Arizona in order to have a secure border, to have schools that aren't brainwashing our kids, and in order to have good policies that help all Arizonans. And I want to help everyone. I don't care if you're a Democrat, independent, or Republican. America First policies will make your life better. You can also see where my rhino, my weak rhino opponent, stands on everything. And I've got it all there. I've got her voting record in black and white. And you can see what she's truly been up to, and that she's lying in all of her millions of dollars in TV ads. This is the most expensive governor's race this state has ever seen, and we haven't even gotten to the primary. That's how desperate the swamp is. They're trying desperately to hold on to their power grip, and they're not going to be able to.
I tell you one thing, and I can say this as an aficionado, Donald Trump being the best, you are clearly the second best at being able to blow up, turn the tables on the mainstream media, and blow them up on live TV. They don't want to, trust me, there's not a lot of people in New York or Washington, D.C. signing, say, hey, I want to go carry the, I want to cover Carrie Lake out in Arizona. It's not career enhancing.
Hey, why won't Mika have me on? I would love to go on Morning Joe and talk to Mika about what we're doing here in Arizona and why it is the best policy, but I don't think she's brave enough.
Oh, okay, so you're actually putting forward right now, Morning, and by the way, you know, the War Room leads the effort in changing the name of the show to Morning Mika. She carries the whole weight. Joe's kind of a deadbeat. She carries the weight. I hope MSNBC's paying her more. You know, I don't want to get into personal things about how they negotiate contracts, but I hope they're paying her more. She carries the weight. I would say she's not a fan, Carrie, but you're volunteering. You would take, have they, by the way, have they reached, as much as she smack talks you, have they reached out to you to have you on the show?
Nope. They send their little minion reporter down here who is he's just a leftist rat. And I did one interview with him. Of course, he twisted it and turned it, and they tried to call me the face of the insurrection. I wasn't even there on January 6th. They're cowards. Why don't they just have me on? I'm happy to go face to face with Mika, do a live interview, put me on the show, but don't send your minions out here and then try to cut and splice an interview. I'll go on live any day, any time with her. And I'd also offer the ladies of The View to interview me. I'd be happy to go on and talk about policies that will help Arizonans and Americans and how we can secure the border and why it's so important we do that and restore honesty to our elections. I'll debate them all day, every day, Steve.
Carrie, courage is contagious, and courage is the key virtue, because it's upon courage that all the other virtues rest, and you have courage. And I think it's one of the primary reasons President Trump endorsed you, is about your courage. One more time, how do people get to your site?
Thank you. KarrieLake.com, KarrieLake.com. And you can find me on Truth Social. I'm on Getter. I'm also on the cesspool known as Twitter. I'm also on Facebook under The Carrie Lake. So you can find me all over, and we're putting out a message of actually hope. I have incredible amounts of hope and faith in the American people. We are going to take back this country, do amazing things. And I do believe, like President Trump, that our best days are ahead of us, Steve.
Carrie Lake from Arizona, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thanks.
Ben Harnwell, head of our international out of Rome. Tee us up. Why should anybody in the United States have any interest and the deplorables of the Netherlands fighting the man, fighting Davos and Brussels about climate change, sir?
Morning, Steve. Well, because what's happening in the Netherlands now is actually part of a causal chain. Before what happened, but we're going to show just in a moment, not yet, in a moment, we're going to show some images coming through from the Netherlands. But this is a replay of what we saw a month ago in Sri Lanka. When I come back afterwards, I'm going to explain the connection here. But this is a catastrophe, a synthetic manufactured catastrophe, which is now hemorrhaging from one country to the next. It brought down the government in Sri Lanka. Let's see whether Mark Rutte is able to survive in the Netherlands. And presumably, for the same motives, it's also going to destabilize the United States. But first, let me set the background. In the Netherlands, there are around 54,000 agricultural businesses with exports totaling €94.5 billion. And in fact, it's such a success story. And the Netherlands is the world's largest second largest, after the United States, agricultural exporter.
Hold on. I want to make sure everybody understands. Hang on. These guys have been doing this for 2,000 years, farming. The country's underwater. They built the dikes. These brothers know how to farm. We have, I think, 900 million, is it? 900 million acres, farmer acres in the country. I got to double check that. We have a lot, okay? We're the most productive, biggest exporter in the world. The second biggest in the world is the Dutch, okay? Can those brothers farm? I think they know what they're doing. So why do they got to take guidance from anybody? They know what they're doing, Ben Harnwell.
Nothing more attracts the attention than our sociopathic globalist elites than something that works by itself, because they want to come in, meddle it, destroy it, and then grift off the back of getting it right. I'm going to go into this when I come back. However, this is the cue to Denver to start, the footage that we have now. This idyllic Dutch bliss has come to an end, sadly. Why? Because the European Union has passed a regulation, which is being adopted now by all the member states, to reduce pollutants like nitrogen oxide and ammonia by 50% up until by the year 2030. And they have, this has been incorporated just now in the law that in the Netherlands. And then the individual provinces now have a year to work out how they're going to adopt this. Obviously, by cutting down the basis of contemporary fertilizers, productivity is going to fall through the floor. And that's why the Dutch farmers here that you can see are protesting. And there are tens of thousands of people out as we speak. I know we're going to get some direct on the spot. Yeah, but-